Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, and welcome back to the special edition of the 40 Cents Fire American Soccer Show. The USA at the moment taking on Honduras. We still have a couple of seconds remaining as 5 minutes of stoppage time was added on to the second half, tied at one. Obviously, a big moment here for the USA with Miguel Ibarra of Minnesota United FC from the NESL as he finally gets subbed into this match a bit late, in my opinion, if you felt that he was going to do anything. And at the moment, it looks like that's the end of that. Full-time whistle has been blown. The United States and Honduras have leveled the score, and that will be the end of that. A very solid draw, I would have to say, for Honduras, because the truth of the matter is this. The United States, as good of a first half as it was, against them with a nice opening goal by Jozy Altidore. Sadly, the second half at the start up to that point, to the end of this match, very, very sloppy, very, very unlike a U.S. men's national team. But once again, these are the games after the World Cup, these friendly dates, of course, mostly for the European sides because they're doing Euro Cup qualifying right now. These are the moments where you have to say that it's just not a good moment right now for the United States, as they are right now playing very, very sloppy in the second half. And in three games already in this finishing up the 2014 calendar year, the United States right now one win, two draws, no losses. Joining me on the post-game show is Kartik Krishnayar from World Soccer Talk as well. And Kartik, I have to say, once again, over at FAU Stadium, just like it was at Rentschler Field in East Hartford, Connecticut, first halves have been fantastic. Second halves have been absolutely sloppy.
Yeah, I mean, that happens in friendlies. You bring on a lot of reserves, and you bring on people who aren't necessarily regulars, and these things happen, right? So, I mean, I wouldn't be too alarmed by it. I mean, I felt like on the balance of play, certainly, Honduras deserved the draw. I mean, I thought they played very well in the first half. Honduras is a side that's underperformed at World Cups, these last two World Cups, but we know they've been pretty much as good as anyone in CONCACAF. So, That's something where there's just not a whole lot of gap between the United States and Honduras. We saw that in the qualifiers last year. We saw that in 2009 in both games between the two sides, even in qualifying, even though the U.S. won both games. I mean, they were both knockdown, drag-out fights. And we saw that again tonight. I think you always have to be weary of the threat, the athleticism of Honduras and the threat in the air, and give away a free kick, a foul that late in the game, and Minor Figueroa, he's not playing right now as much as he previously had in his Premier League career, but this is still an accomplished long-term Premier League player, the likes of which the United States doesn't have on their squad right now. So you give him a chance in that situation, he's going to bury a header and probably a fair result.
I probably agree with you. And before we really delve into this game, even though we didn't get much time, you, of course, being the former communications director of the North American Soccer League, how good did it feel to see Miguel Ibarra finally getting on the field 4, 5, 6 minutes probably? Maybe should have gotten on the field maybe a little bit more time, but still, that's a great moment for Miguel Ibarra to put on the U.S. national team shirt and to go out there and get a great moment, not just for himself, but for Minnesota United as well as for the NESL.
Yeah, a great moment for me personally as someone who worked, as you said, I was the head communications officer for 3.5 years at the NESL. We had a lot of players that I felt should have gotten a U.S. book while I was there, Miguel Ibarra being among them, and they didn't. The NASL wasn't being scouted or whatever the reason was. But Jürgen Klinsmann has been actively scouting the North American Soccer League. That I knew. I was not as shocked by the call-up as some other folks, because I knew Klinsmann had come to NASL games, had actually gone to a Minnesota United game, that he was involved in looking at players in the NASL to try and deepen the pool. But it was a pretty big deal. And here's the thing. There are a lot of players playing in the United States in USL Pro and in Major League and in the North American Soccer League that folks who just watch Major League Soccer or just pay attention to Major League Soccer don't see. A lot of guys that have a quality, have a creativity that some of the guys in MLS may not have. And I would also add this. I think a lot of the coaching, and I've gone on record as saying this before and been skewered for it, so I'm going to say it again, and people can react any way they want. A lot of the tactical coaching in Major League Soccer is not, and I repeat, is not at the same level as it is in the NASL. I'm just going to say that. The players are better in Major League Soccer. There is no doubt in my mind about that. There are a few exceptions. Guys like Ibarra are better than some of the guys in MLS. But by and large, you know, you go through the NASL, there are 10 teams this season. There might be one guy, like Tyrone Forlardo, off of the call, one guy. That could really play well at MLS. There's one guy on Tampa Bay that could do that. That's probably it was Mulholland last year who's playing very well in MLS this year. It's probably Rusty. It's probably Darryl Russell this year. But you know, there's just one guy or two guys. Okay, so the talk by some folks, you know, these Cosmos fans and others, that the NASL is somehow at the MLS's level from a playing perspective. No way. But when you're trying to fit guys in a team and in a system, that requires tactical awareness, which is what Jürgen Klinsmann wants from his players. There is a lot more tactical coaching that I see going on at the NASL level with managers like Manny Lagos, who's Miguel Ibarra's manager in Minnesota, guys like Ricky Hill, guys like Gunter Kronsteiner, guys like Gio Savarese, who's very tactically adept with the Cosmos, than I quite frankly do in San Antonio's taking a little bit of a different step with Marcina this year, but Tim Hankinson was very, very adept at different tactics and different styles and ideas. And I do in MLS where most of the teams, with the exception of Kansas City, Kansas City is great. Kansas City is just Vermees has got that. Peter Vermees has got that thing at a very European level as far as tactics and awareness. But there's just a staleness about a lot of the MLS teams. They all play the same way. They stifle creativity in players. You're not allowed to think. You're just kind of very robotic in some of these systems. So that's one of the things Klinsmann and the U.S. staff has looked at NASL for. It's not necessarily that there are players in the NASL that are better than their counterparts in MLS, because they're not. I don't care what Ted Westerveld and people like that say on Twitter. They're not. Okay, the leagues are not at the same level, but are not even close. But there are reasons why NASL players could fit better into the player pool with the U.S. than a lot of their MLS counterparts, and that's their ability to be flexible, to fit into positions, to read a game tactically differently than maybe some guys do in MLS.
Absolutely. I definitely would have to agree with that. There are some coaches that are probably not tactically good enough in MLS. You never know about that. But, you know, what Manny Lagos has done for Minnesota, Giovanni Savarese, as we've already mentioned, Kronsteiner for Fort Lauderdale.
Yeah.
You've seen it all down there with what's going on with the NASL, of course, and definitely I'll agree. I mean, and here's the question actually I have for you, if you don't mind, if we can go towards USL Pro department. I mean, Bill Betcher for Harrisburg, in my opinion, I think he's done a fantastic job with the Harrisburg City Islanders. Now, obviously, he'd probably be a long shot, but do you think in the future maybe he might be a national team head coach in the future if there is an opportunity for him?
I mean, I like the idea, Daniel. I don't know that it'll happen, but I don't think it'll happen. But I've watched Harrisburg a couple times this year. I was at a game where they eliminated Orlando City a couple weeks ago from the USL Pro playoffs. I was at that game in Orlando, and he's got it tactically. The players play for him. He's a players coach, and he's very tactically aware. So I like him. I think he's a guy, and you talk about his counterpart with Orlando. You're talking about the Orlando game. Adrian Heath is going to shake up MLS in a little in a way next season. I mean, he's a high-level coach, and a lot of the MLS teams will be surprised, and a lot of MLS fans, by how successful a coach he is, how much he'll get out of the guys he has in Orlando. Now, they may not have a great team next season. It's an expansion team. They're holding over a couple guys from USL Pro, but not a whole lot. But I think Orlando City will be competitive next year. Now, when you talk about Belcher, I think he's on that list. I think there's some other coaches, D2 and D3, that are outstanding coaches right now. And you look at just the makeup of D2 and D3 and the need to be creative with your player signings, the need to be creative with the way you play soccer, because you're limited in your budget, so you're in this hyper competitive atmosphere where you have guys for 1 year. You're not signing guys to long term deals. I know the Cosmos have signed guys to long term deals, but generally what's been happening in D2 is you sign a guy to a 1 year deal with an option. Maybe another team comes in D2 and swipes them. I mean, recently the Cosmos and Minnesota have been swiping players from other teams because they have higher payrolls. Next season, it's entirely possible Fort Lauderdale, with their new ownership, will be doing the same thing. Tampa Bay has done it, actually, for a number of years, where they just swipe guys from other D2 teams. So you never really kind of establish a rhythm with the same players, with the exception of Minnesota. Manny has kept the core of that team together since 2000, and they've added some important pieces. But, 10, I guess they have some good players, really since 11 when they won the title, and then 12, they got to the final again. 13, they were a little bit disappointing last year when they went out and signed a bunch of guys. So for 14, they kind of got back to those core guys, and they're winning the league right now. So you have to be a little more creative and thoughtful in how you coach and how you build the team at the D2 and the D3 level. And just one last word on Manny Longos before we get to whatever's next. I can't speak highly enough as to his knowledge of this game, his knowledge of this sport, his understanding of the business around the sport, his understanding of how you connect with players, how you win the trust of your players, and the tactical side of the game. I mean, again, maybe this is me being in a vacuum in the NASL, but I know some MLS coaches. I don't know a guy who's American, who played in Major League Soccer, who is American-born and bred coach, that he played overseas for a couple of years, but is really, you know, an MLS player, right? Not one of these guys who went to the Premier League and, you know, has Brad Friedel's experiences or whatever. You know, he's an American coach, American-born and raised. I don't know a single other American coach out there, other than Bob Bradley, and Bob Bradley's coaching abroad now, that has the package Manny Lagos has. Now, he's at home in Minnesota, right? That's home for him. He's from there. His family, his dad, their soccer legacies in the Twin Cities. But, I look at some of the guys in MLS that are American coaches, and I say, you know what? Manny Lagos is a much better – I'm not going to get into names, but Manny Lagos is a much better coach when you take the whole package of coaching than this guy, and this guy. But maybe he just doesn't understand the MLS salary cap, or he was out of the club and he hasn't gotten a job in MLS, or – you know, I don't know, man. These personal circumstances, maybe just want to stay in Minnesota, as I said, at home. But I cannot speak highly enough as to Manny Lagos as a coach. I mean, he's the best I've seen among American coaches that I've observed up close and personally. And he's fantastic.
Absolutely. And here's my little last thing about the NASL as well as Miguel Ibarra. I'm going to inform everyone of the Men in Blazers tweet, Ibarra American Shinji Kagawa. That is all. Ah, yes, exactly. But once again, Kardik, 1-1 draw again with the U.S. here down at FAU Stadium at the home of Florida Atlantic University. As once again, it's a 1-1 draw between the U.S. and Honduras. Josie Altidore getting on the score sheet. That was a great goal. Nice little cut when he got that ball from Michael Bradley. And at the same time, that was a nice save on the toe poke slide by Mix Discarud to give that ball to Bradley, who looped it to Josie, and he converted it. That was a fantastic shot.
Yeah, and it was kind of Ian Dark remarked on the telecast, and I should mention I wasn't at the game tonight. I mean, Boca Raton is, I mean, the stadium is 5 minutes from me or 10 minutes from me. It's just, and I haven't had a U.S. national team game this close to me ever. You know, I've gone to national team games in other places, right? But even when they've been in Miami, that's much further from me than Boca Raton. I just, I'm in the middle of a political campaign. I just wasn't able to go tonight. I mean, I turned the game on at 8 and watched it, but I was backed up until that point. Election day 3 weeks
today.
So, yeah, so I wasn't able to go, but I would have loved to have been there when Josy scored that goal because Boca is his hometown. We're also proud of him down here and what he's accomplished. And Lion and Eagle Pub, we just formed an AO Boca Raton chapter, which I'm a member of. I know maybe as a journalist I shouldn't be in it, but it's the national team supporters club, and I feel it's appropriate. So I'm in AO Boca. We just formed this club, this supporters group, a month ago. And our local pub, Lion and Eagle, where we watch the games, and I will resume watching games there after the election. Lion and Eagle is...
Whoop. I think we might have lost him. He's still there, Kardik.
No, yeah. And Lion and Eagle is Josy's home pub. And Josy is really an inspirational figure down here because, you know, a lot of times you have kids who come through the youth soccer system, the pay-to-play academies we have in clubs here. And we never had an example of a player to hold up to them and say, you could be this kind of guy before we had Josy Altidore and before we had Alejandro Bedoya, who also. And those two guys have both come home today and done themselves proud. And we're very, very pleased with it. Michael Bradley, great, again, fantastic for the national team. Great setup there. It's unfortunate about, it depends who you talk to, whether it's unfortunate or not what happened in Toronto this season. But, he put that disappointment of the other day behind him. And TFC's failure for the, what is this now, 8 consecutive years? A failure,
yep.
And
yep.
Was able to shake it off and do a good job.
Absolutely. Michael Bradley, I saw him have that meltdown on Saturday night at Red Bull Arena when the Red Bulls put 3 past Joe Bendik. And obviously Toronto's having another horrible ending to another MLS season. But still, I thought Michael Bradley regained his composure playing for the national team today. He looked pretty good. There were some moments possibly that, the passing could have been a little bit better outside of that great looping ball to Josy for the goal. But I thought Michael Bradley, he reclaimed some confidence. He reclaimed, he just kept his passion down. He kept all that yelling at the referee down and everything. And I just think he looked a lot better in this game than he did on Saturday night at Red Bull Arena.
Yeah, and speaking of Red Bull Arena, there's the big game right now, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
Colombia,
it's amazing right now that Canada is 0-0 with Colombia at the moment at Red Bull Arena, and it's almost halftime. And that was a great save from the Canadian keeper.
I assume that'll change.
we're waiting.
Goal or 2 or 3. But the big thing that you just mentioned, Daniel, is it's an issue with Michael Bradley. It's been an issue. He's now 26 or 27 years old, right? He's just, I think he's turned 26 now, right? So he's had this problem, this temperament, this tendency to explode at officials, late in games, when adversity strikes. Throughout his career, it was something that we really thought would be weaned out of him as he grew older. He was incredibly mature and sophisticated as a player, even at a young age, and even at 17 or 18 or 19. You saw him with the Metro Stars for a season under his dad as the coach, and thought, well, it's because he's a coach's son. But then we saw some signs of volatility and immaturity with the national team. In the Under-20 World Cup in 2007, and again, Confederations Cup in 2009, attacking the media, attacking the fans, going after an official in the tunnel, things like that after the game. Again, ended up getting suspended for several matches for that. Some incidents like that after that. And his attacks on Brian Strauss, our colleague who wrote for the Sporting News at the time, is now with Sports Illustrated, saying that it was irresponsible for Strauss to write what he had written about Jurgen Klinsmann. And, you know, it's great that you have a player that defends the coach. And obviously, Bradley is a coach's son, so he felt like he should speak up and defend Klinsmann. But it was just, you know, I didn't sit well with me because I thought he was attacking Brian Strauss's integrity. And I didn't like that at all. And basically implying that Strauss had made up some of these things, which he didn't. Brian Strauss doesn't do that. Okay,
no, absolutely not.
Right. So, but Bradley, you know, he just I don't know. And the Toronto, it was. There's been so much expectation on them. There's been so much expectation on him coming back to Major League Soccer in the prime of his career, and it hasn't worked out. And instead of just walking away in that situation, we all saw it Saturday night as TFC was eliminated by New York, by the Red Bulls.
Yep.
I shake my head. I mean, I'm so frustrated by it. There's just no way to rationalize it. It's just an immaturity and an anger. Maybe it drives him as a footballer. Maybe it makes him a better soccer player. I don't know, Daniel, but it was disappointing for me to see. And it's something that he hasn't tackled, he hasn't solved in all these years.
Absolutely. I agree with you. I think right now Michael Bradley needs to find a way to calm his anger down. He needs to find a way to reclaim some of that professionalism that we've seen in the past. I understand, you know, he doesn't like how these referees have been officiating with pro and everything like that, but still one day he's going to get a double yellow on the spot if he doesn't stop his ranting, and then what good will he do to put his side down to 10 men and then be suspended for a game? Maybe MLS suspends him for 2 games. We don't know what's going to happen with the disciplinary committee, but hopefully this will.
But yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, hopefully he'll find a way to calm himself down. Ho-hum game for Clint. I mean, he looked okay with the ball. He looked all right. I mean, nothing to write home about. I thought Dempsey did some decent moments. You know, nothing to say like he coughed up the ball or anything like that. He tried to put me on frame, and it just didn't happen.
No, he didn't have it tonight, but that's okay. He didn't make any mistakes, as you said, and I think good. He'll go back, try and lock down the supporters' shield, or have they locked it down? Have they clinched it?
Not yet. They're tied on points right now, Cardick. They're tied on points, Seattle and Los Angeles, and the last 2 games are between those 2 teams.
Right. Okay, that's right. So, so he'll go back and try and lock this thing down in competition with Landon Donovan, who's playing the last regular season games of his MLS career.
Absolutely. And we'll see what happens.
Yeah, we'll see if Donovan resurfaces at Everton in a couple of years. But, I thought Clinton was okay today. I didn't think he did anything terribly wrong. And it's a friendly, and he's got business on his mind in Seattle. And this was just, you know, get through this game. Don't make any mistakes. And go try and lift the cup. Go and try and win the Supporters' Shield. I mean, I think people who say, well, everything is based around the MLS Cup, I think they learned last year when they saw Timmy Cahill and Mike Petke and the reaction of the Red Bulls that the Supporters' Shield is for a lot of us just as important as winning the MLS Cup. And the MLS Cup is a bit of a crap. One.
Yeah, absolutely.
New York was the best team in Major League Soccer last season.
They were.
Seattle and LA are the 2 best teams. Someone else might win. The Red Bulls might win it this year, but they were better last year, I assure you.
Yes, absolutely. We'll see what happens. It should be interesting to see what's going on. Jermaine Jones played center back today. First time we've ever seen him at center back. You know what? I have to be honest. He didn't look that bad. He looked pretty good. Now, we don't know.
He looked better than our normal center backs, but yeah, go ahead.
He really did, yeah. He really did. And he came back and he made some great challenges, never got booked for slide tackling the ball away. That's always a good thing. I was screaming with Andrew.
What a tackle that was.
Was that great tackle?
Yeah, and I thought he did some good things.
Yeah, he really did. And, you know, when Jermaine Jones, he got booked, obviously, today for the lifting the left leg up and tripping up the Honduran player. Andrew Doss from the New York Times, I follow him on Twitter. I said to him, did you win your bet on the booking? He said he needs the second one to get it completed, but we'll see what happens. And it didn't, but thank God.
And then, of course, you've got Mick Siskerud,
I thought he did a decent job. You know, obviously got booked and on that challenge, which when you see the replay, I didn't think it was that bad of a challenge. I think he won the ball at the same time. I think maybe the referee, obviously it was from behind. That's obviously why he got booked. But I didn't think it was a bad challenge that it was bookable. I mean, yeah, it's a foul. You want to say it's a foul, it's a foul. Is it a booking? If it's from behind, yeah, but I just felt that it wasn't a bookable offense. It was a foul, and that was it. But I thought I thought Discord played very well, you know, coming out of the defensive midfielder spot. Obviously, you're trying to help out with the attack at the same time, being that defensive midfielder to try and help out the back line as much as possible. But I think, to be honest, I think Discord is going to challenge Michael Bradley for the central midfield spot to help out in the attack, because I think Discord's more of an attacker than he is a defensive midfielder.
Yeah. I agree, and I think this was a baptism by fire for him. I mean, can he truly be a two-way player? Mix is a guy that's very creative in the attack. His movement is pretty good in the final third, but he's not a guy that's ever had to win tackles, win balls, and keep the shape. And part of his tactical indiscipline explains why he did not play in the World Cup, because he's not a guy that Jurgen Klinsmann felt he could rely on to keep in that position and keep the shape. Kyle Beckerman was preferred to him, and rightfully so. And obviously, Jermaine Jones had an outstanding World Cup and was playing in that role. But with Jones dropping back to center back today, there was the opportunity to play Discord there and see what he could do. Because Mix isn't really a number 10 either. He can't play out wide. I mean, he's one of these creative players, kind of pseudo-creative players, much like a Beckerman, actually, that didn't have a role in the previous U.S. system but fit into this system if they can become two-way players, which Beckerman is. Discord is not. But Discord showed some real signs tonight of becoming that. And I agree with you. That was a foul. Fair goal for Honduras, good finish from Minor Figueroa, but it should not have been a booking.
Yes, I didn't think it was a booking. I thought it was more of a foul, but then again, what are you going to do? In our eyes, we felt it wasn't a booking, but in the referee's eyes, it was. So nothing we can do about that, and off we can just move on, and off we go with more talk about this friendly. I thought the combination play was sharp in the first half. I really thought that they played very, very solid as a team in the first half. But then three straight games that from the start of the second half to the end, it was sloppy. I mean, they're lucky enough to leave Czech Republic 1-0 ahead, and they're unfortunate to be equalized. But let's be honest, the goal by Enner Valencia in East Hartford was absolutely brilliant, while this free kick after the Discord foul, absolutely on point. Mario Martinez no longer with Seattle, but he definitely whipped a dangerous ball right into the lane of Figueroa. And this is the thing that gets me a little bit perturbed, and this is on Honduras. And even I talked to Juan Arango John Jagu from Big Soccer covers the Mexican national team, and he knows pretty well CONCACAF too. John always says they're always a great team. They've got great players. They can go and they can take you down whenever they turn it on. But when they got to the World Cup, it's stupid stuff that we saw against France, against Switzerland, that makes you shake your head and say, why are they not performing at the level that they always do against their opponents in CONCACAF during World Cup qualifying?
Yeah, we talked about that at the outset. I mean, it's one of these things where they've done it in the last two World Cups. I mean, I don't think there's been a whole lot of difference between Honduras and the United States and Honduras and Mexico in qualifying the last two. I mean, well, obviously they were much better than Mexico this time. They beat them twice, right? So they went to Azteca and beat them. I mean, let's not forget that. I mean, that's something that's forgotten often. So, I don't understand what's happened to them when they go to the World Cups. There's indiscipline. They've had in Rueda and Suarez two Colombian managers who maybe were good for qualifying. I say they were good for qualifying, but Honduras has got CONCACAF is getting stronger, but Honduras is going to be in the top three or four of CONCACAF anyway. regardless of who their manager is, with the players they've had, they've underperformed when they've gotten to the big stage. They've underperformed in Gold Cups too. They're bad at tournament football, and this is a real knock on them. And you know, I said that about Costa Rica for years. That Costa Rica underperformed in Gold Cups, although they performed decently in Copa Americas and in World Cups. And you know, this World Cup, I mean, Costa Rica was. I think they were unfortunate enough to be in the semifinals. They got into that semifinal against Argentina. Who knows? Argentina wasn't particularly good, in my opinion. Costa Rica could have very easily been in the final of this World Cup. They went to won the final against Germany, but I'm telling you, they weren't far. Now, for Honduras, that has to be so frustrating because the reality is that Honduras has better footballers than Costa Rica. They have more outstanding players. They have more athletic players. Maybe their players aren't necessarily as technical, but there's something missing in the structure. Look, Costa Rica has overachieved relative to the rest of Central America for years without necessarily the – I mean, they had a generation with the Winston Parks and the Juan Chopes and those kinds of players that were Ronald Gomez, that were fantastic. In 2002, they were just in the wrong group in the World Cup. I mean, they were every bit as good as the U.S. or Mexico in that World Cup in the group stage. It just were, you know, they were in a group with Brazil and Turkey, both of whom got to the semifinals. They still had 4 points out of that group. But Honduras, it's the contrast with Costa Rica that frustrates me. It's the contrast with Mexico in this World Cup, when you consider, you just look at the squads. I guess Herrera did something very special with Mexico. We would agree on that, in getting Mexico fired up into the level they were at. But I just look at the teams, the guys who are actually on the squads, and say there's no reason Mexico should have been better than Honduras. That much better. Where they're getting to the round of 16, and they're getting 7 points. They were unlucky not to beat Brazil. They could have had 9 points. They could have won that group. That would have changed the whole trajectory of the World Cup, because Brazil would have played Holland and been out right there and then. And Mexico, who knows? They might have beaten Chile. They might have beaten Colombia. Honduras has got similar level players, if not better players, who are playing at as high a level in the club game as the guys from Mexico, and they don't perform. But they do perform in CONCACAF, right, as you're saying. So I don't know. I don't know if it's mentality. And you see it again today. There's not a whole lot of difference between Honduras and the United States. Anytime Honduras plays Mexico, there's not really much of a difference. I think the U.S. is slightly better. I think Mexico is slightly better. Actually, I don't know that Mexico is slightly better. I think the U.S. is slightly better than Honduras. I don't think Mexico or Costa Rica are necessarily better than Honduras, player for player. But both are much better teams, and Costa Rica, as I said, Costa Rica, this may seem ridiculous to people to say this, Costa Rica was unlucky not to be in the semifinals, and I very plausibly could have seen them in the finals of this World Cup. They were that good in this World Cup, as crazy as that sounds. I mean, people will say, if it was some European country and I made that case, they'd be like, yeah, that team, Belgium or somebody, yeah, that team should have been in the final. But because it's Costa Rica, they're in CONCACAF, people will say it's absurd. But I'm telling you, they weren't that far from being in the final of this World Cup. And yet Honduras has better players than they do. And Honduras hasn't gotten a point yet in the World Cup. No, they got a point, right? And they got a 0-0 draw in the last World Cup. But they've just been terrible in both World Cups they qualified for now.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, because, you know, we always talk about how CONCACAF is improving, how CONCACAF is getting better. It's not just the U.S. It's not just Mexico now. Now we're seeing what Costa Rica can do. Honduras is – you feel like Honduras are, like, right there, but somehow they just can't find the mentality to go through the hump. Hopefully the new head coach for Canada can get Canada back into some sort of a strong level to get
them over the hump and walk up qualifying.
Well,
if we want to talk about Canada for a minute, Dan, I'll just tell you that the issue with Canada is that they have – I mean, I know this is a corrupt sport.
It's a corrupt sport,
yeah. Yeah, it's particularly in third world countries, in Africa and everything. I will tell you, I do not know of a developed country or even maybe an underdeveloped country like in the developing world, like in Africa and in the Caribbean and stuff. I do not know of at least a country that's developed that has the kind of football association or soccer association that is as bad as the Canadian Soccer Association. I was just going to say, put that out there. So Canada is not going to be successful until they deal with their endemic corruption and the cronyism and the organizational structure of the CSA. It is a joke. It is the biggest joke for a developed country in the world. And Canada very easily could go the path of Australia, the United States, Japan.
Yep, absolutely.
It became a big deal, and those national teams got very good. Canada has greater support for the club game. Look, if you want to compare the television ratings for Major League Soccer, actually, not you don't even have to compare the ratings. The ratings, it's off the chart in Canada compared to the United States. If you want to compare the number of viewers for Major League Soccer games, Canada has 30 million people. The United States has 10 times as many people. Yet more people will watch a Vancouver, a Montreal, a Toronto game when they're on national TV in Canada than will watch even a Seattle or LA Galaxy or New York Red Bulls game when they're on national TV in the United States. More people raw. I'm not just talking about the rating. The rating will be 10 times as high because there are, you know, 10 times less people. NASL, I can tell you, Ottawa and Edmonton have the greatest supporters, I mean, the greatest TV bases of the teams in the North American Soccer League, other than maybe now the Cosmos have their own TV deal, but, you know, I don't really count the Cosmos as a legitimate, organization when we're comparing other organizations. But so the club game is fantastically popular. The European game is fantastically popular. But the professional teams in Canada, Toronto, Edmonton, I don't know where Ottawa sits in this because they've just taken a step up from PDL to the NASL level. But Toronto FC, Montreal Impact, Vancouver Whitecaps, FC Edmonton. And I worked with three of those organizations because three of those organizations were in the NASL when I started. Only Edmonton's left. Two of them, Vancouver and Montreal, went to MLS. They are all sickened by the Canadian Soccer Association, and they've tried to reform the CSA from within these professional clubs. They're these provincial soccer associations that have all kinds of power in Canada. Their entire system is dysfunctional. So when you look at CONCACAF and you look at players and you look at player development and you think, well, you know, Canada really should be there. They should be better than Costa Rica. They should be better than Honduras. It's just not. It's because of their soccer association, and this is why you have guys like De Guzman, you know, going and deciding he's going to go play for Holland, even though he was born and raised in Canada. You've got guys like Begovic, who played for Canada at the youth level, who say, hey, you know, I'm just going to go ahead and play for Bosnia. Canada, if a guy has a route out of playing for Canada, he will do it until they get their act together. And I know there are a lot of Canadian fans. We have our great friend Dwayne Rollins, mutual friend. He'll say, this guy's, we wish this guy played for us, that guy, Steve Sandor. But they all know the truth. I mean, I've talked to Canadian journalists all the time about this Canadian Soccer Association. I know we have a lot of fans here in the United States that get frustrated with the U.S. Soccer Federation. I do too. Mm-hmm. But just be thankful we have the USSF and not the CSA.
Exactly. I don't know, absolutely, because, you know, after all, watching Canada win the Gold Cup that one year, and I think it was in the 2000 year, and you're thinking to yourself, you know, hey, listen, USA has a couple, Mexico has plenty, finally Canada gets one, even though it's against Colombia, against the guest team back in those days, but still, you have to say that for Canada after winning that, especially at the LA Memorial Coliseum, you're thinking to yourself, great, now this is the boost that the Canadian Soccer Association needs to improve everything. And what happens? Unfortunately, it all died. And that's the shame of it all. And you feel bad for people that not only cover Canadian soccer, that play for Canadian clubs. Even Canadians are over in Europe or in, maybe in Mexico or in Central America. Maybe in South America, that they don't want to be associated with the national team because of all the cronyism that's going on.
Right. Yeah. Toronto is the most cosmopolitan city in North America. It's one of the most cosmopolitan cities in the world. And so even in Toronto itself, even in Ontario itself, you have an indigenous football soccer culture, which is unlike any other in North America. Which is why Toronto FC, in spite of all the losing, in spite of all the bullshit, for lack of a better term, has been so successful. So successful from a business perspective. The television ratings for Premier League and Serie A now, there's a contractual dispute. It's not on television right now in Canada. But when it's on, it's good ratings. MLS, I've just said, the ratings are much better. The actual interest, okay, you can cite attendance numbers. Say, well, the attendance in some random MLS team in the U.S. is just, Colorado, Dallas, they're drawing what? They're not drawing that much worse than the Canadian team. I am telling you, when the Canadian teams go on the road, it's like when Vancouver goes on the road, when Montreal goes on the road, when Toronto goes on the road, it's just like the number of people who watch their NBA or Major League Baseball team or their NHL team go on the road in the United States. I mean, it's they didn't know. They sit and watch the games. Whereas in Los Angeles, 25,000 people show up to the Home Depot Center for Galaxy games. But guess what? If Galaxy goes on the road, the same 25,000 people are watching the games. And it's not on TV. It's not like a million. Whereas in Canada, it is. I mean, literally, they're big-time teams, these clubs. Yet, they will never kick on as a soccer-playing nation until there's systematic reform. And I hate to bring up Traffic Sports, who I've worked with, but they have the Canadian rights. They're joined at the hip with the Canadian Soccer Association, and now they and the NASL are talking about creating this Canadian Professional League, which is needed, but I think it's a way of the CSA maybe trying to take more power away from the established professional clubs, particularly the three clubs that are in Major League Soccer, two of which, Vancouver and Montreal, were D2 teams for years, although D2 was D1 in Mexico. In Canada, USL and then NASL. We were D1 in Canada until obviously all these teams went. Take power away from established organizations that actually develop their own players and establish organizations that have a major footprint in the professional game so that they can try and hoard it with the Canadian Soccer Association. So I very badly want Canada to have its own professional league. But I want Canada to have it done right, and I see this this vain attempt by the CSA and NASL to create a potential Canadian league, as Steve Sandor and Dwayne Rollins have reported on, and Jeremiah Oshon has reported on, probably just a power grab by the Canadian Soccer Association to weaken, weaken Toronto, but really weaken Montreal and Vancouver, the two MLS clubs that have their own academies, their own feeder systems, their own youth programs. Vancouver's the model. Vancouver's the model for the teams in the U.S. too. So they're trying to weaken the Whitecaps by doing this.
Absolutely. Let's go back to this match. What do you make of Alfredo Morales? I mean, I like his fire. I like how he's going up and down the field. But I don't know. Technically, do you think he's got what it takes? Because at the moment, outside of the Czech Republic game, I just, I don't know. There's something missing about his game that maybe I'm not pinpointing enough on. Is Morales, do you feel he has the goods to go out there? I mean, right now he'll be coming off the bench. I don't think he's good enough to start, obviously. But right now, what do you see that maybe I'm missing?
He's a player that I've been intrigued about for some time, actually. Steven Berlusconi, my former assistant at the NASL, who's now with the Four Loyal Strikers, and I used to talk about him a lot, hoping that we would see him in the U.S. camp, and obviously he was eligible to play for Germany, too. I don't think he's good enough to play for Germany, quite frankly. Although, you know, Germany might be looking at some new players after today's result, with the Irish playing so well against them and Ireland getting that late goal. I think he's a guy that can really contribute down the road. I mean, Klinsmann's got a couple of years to blend him in, and maybe first step is for him to play regularly this season in Germany and be a regular, and then try and make the Gold Cup squad and then push on from there. He's still young, and I think he could be a useful player going forward.
That's pretty good, and let's hopefully that does happen. Obviously, I want to root for every player that's going to get an opportunity for the national team. I want to see them do well. Tim Ream is a guy that when he made the move to Bolton, I felt personally that he wasn't ready to make the move to go to England, even though the money was good, which I can understand a little bit, but still I felt that he wasn't ready after 2 years of Major League Soccer. I didn't feel personally he was ready to make that move. National team-wise, I think he's done, I will say, near decently. I still think he needs a couple more seasons under his belt playing for Bolton to get to that national team top level. But if he doesn't see the field again after 2014 is over with, I have a funny feeling he might be on his last legs for the national team.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think, like Brett Shea, it's been a poor move to England. I mean, it hasn't been as bad as Brett Shea's, but he went too early. He went too soon. He went to the wrong club. He went to a club that's in disarray. There was actually a great article in The Guardian this week about how poorly Bolt has done in managing their finance, and how they've gone from this Premier League club that was in decent financial shape, but basically through overspending and mismanagement, to being just this club that's an absolute basket case, laboring at the bottom of the championship, trying to avoid relegation to the third division. So Timmy Ream went there. He went there too early. The center back spots are open for the United States. I think that there's no secret about that. Omar Gonzalez looked good in a couple of World Cup matches, but I don't think that's a permanent thing. Beisler is obviously there. Beisler is a keeper. But Tim Ream is not making a case. And Jermaine Jones is now 32 or 33.
That's right. He's 32, and he's making a case that he's going to be the center back for the national team. And we don't even know in 3 years, 4 years' time if he's going to actually have the goods
right
to go out against in Russia. We don't know.
Right,
but
he doesn't need the mobility. This is the thing. I mean, I've thought about this with good physical players in the past, and we've never made this change necessarily with guys. But guys that are good and mobile and good in the air and tenacious, that as they get later in their career, you can always move them to the back line, particularly the center back, not the fullback, not the right back or left back. And
right,
maybe get a couple more years out of them. And it's very possible Jermaine Jones, I mean, I wouldn't bet on it. He's going to be 36 in 2018, but yeah, it's very possible he could factor in to the center back picture, at least going into qualifying. We're only a year and a half from, am I right? Yeah, we're only a year and a half from start of qualifying. So, close to 2 years, but and a year and three quarters away, and he could certainly factor in that, and maybe he makes it to the World Cup.
Yeah, you never know. I mean, if Jermaine Jones still has it, he'll probably be that starting center back next to Matt Beisler over in Russia in 2018. That is if they qualify. Of course, in July, late July, we'll get the qualifying draw underway over in Russia through FIFA. We'll see what happens going forward there, and hopefully there's going to be some interesting stuff. Kardik, talking about, I don't know if you saw halftime, I saw part of it, but obviously the discussion has been, and I've banned this discussion at the start of the 2014 season, because it's just, not that I've ever been against promotion relegation. I've said many, many times that would I like to see it happen here? Yes, I would. I think there are certain things that are, at the moment, we're not ready for
really
this
having this
right
conversation.
Now.
Go ahead. But,
No, I don't mind having the conversation, but it's not like, I'm demanding it. Like, we know other people have demanded, and we're not going to say his name. You won't say his name. I'm not going to say his name. But the thing
well,
is,
I've already
this.
Said his name tonight. So I mean,
you probably have. Well, Alexei Lalas, that's fine. But the point I'm making is that while I don't think it's ready to be implemented right now. I still think there's many things that are blockading the opening the mechanism to allow it to come here. But you've been in the NASL for a good while. You've seen what they've been doing. You know what works at MLS. You know what you know what they're thinking at U.S. Soccer. But in your opinion, what do you think? Should it come now or should it come later?
It can't come now. I mean, it should be a goal. To make this a proper soccer-playing nation, we have to have promotion and relegation. There's no doubt about that. But those who are demanding it immediately don't seem to realize the gulf in businesses and business cultures and in marketing savvy between the first division and the second division. I worked in the second division for 3.5 years. I've continued to be a part of it in one capacity or another. I was the communications director for the NASL for our second division for 3.5 years. Since I was relieved of my duties, I have stayed involved in one capacity or another, either with the league as a contractor or now with the team, with the Fort Lauderdale Strikers. So, I mean, I've been involved in D2 soccer in a paid capacity for 5 years now. And I have to tell you, the gulf in class, in business acumen, between Major League Soccer and the North American Soccer League is enormous. It is not like the difference between the Premier League and the Championship in England. I hear, well, it's like the Premier League and the Championship. Well, maybe in terms of football or soccer playing quality it is. Even that, I don't know. The drop from the Premier League to the Championship is not as severe as the drop from MLS to NASL. NASL would be like bottom-level Championship. You know, the teams closer to relegation from the Championship. They want the top teams that are fighting for promotion from the Championship to the Premier League or not. You know, there's wider gulf in between MLS and NASL. But the business level of a lot of NASL clubs, now this is beginning to change, but the business aspect of the North American Soccer League, comparing it to Major League Soccer, would be like comparing League Two clubs in England or maybe the bottom League One clubs to MLS, to the Premier League, MLS to NASL. So you're really skipping the Championship completely. You're really, from a business perspective, if you want to go ahead and use the English permit, since we seem to like to want to do everything English, right, and use England as our inspiration. So let's do that. People understand the way it's structured in England. If MLS is your Premier League, you don't have a Championship. The NASL is League One, and USL Pro is League Two or the conference. I mean, there are these USL Pro teams that just – I mean, they are conference teams. They were literally semi-professional teams and with semi-professional staff and part-time staff. I mean, I can think of some USL Pro clubs offhand that are now affiliate clubs and MLS clubs that don't even have full-time staff that kind of furlough their staff during the off-season. There are still clubs in the NASL that don't have consistent marketing or PR departments. So this is why you can't have promotion and relegation right now. You have to bring the business level of these lower division clubs. And, you know, people like people who cite promotion and relegation, they'll look at Orlando City and they'll say, Orlando City, they're what a club. You know, this is the way, and of course they bought their way into MLS, but why doesn't everyone else have that option? Because Orlando was a freaking exception to this rule. We have a club in the NASL. Or two clubs. I mean, I would say Minnesota now is structured really well as a business under Bill McGuire and Nick Rogers. Look, the Cosmos, I think, are a bit of I don't want to even get into the Cosmos issue. Cosmos, I don't think, can be an MLS club. There are some clubs at the lower division level, Orlando, who's going, or will be in MLS next year, Sacramento, Minnesota, San Antonio to a certain extent, but not totally. I think San Antonio has some real flaws in their business model and their marketing and PR department. Carolina. But for the most part, you know, you can't take the chance of the Atlanta Silverback, as they're currently construed and currently run, being promoted to Major League Soccer. I will say that full stop. You cannot take that chance of a club that has absolutely no business acumen in their front office, no real sales department besides, you know, glorified, besides like these glorified people who have titles as account executives and stuff, but they're really just, you know, phone cold callers. You can't have those sorts of teams go to Major League Soccer right now with MLS built out as a business the way it is. So you can't have a team like the Pittsburgh Riverhounds, although they're under new ownership, so it might be a little different. You couldn't have a team like the Orange County Blues somehow get promoted twice and get to Major League Soccer. It just, you can't. So do we need promotion and relegation? Yes, we have to get there. How do we get there? We get there by improving the standard of the second and third divisions. How long will that take? That's going to take at least five more years at the second division level, probably longer at the third division level. Are we in progress? Yes, we're in progress. Tampa Bay has new ownership. It's better ownership. Fort Lauderdale has new ownership. It should be better ownership. Atlanta will drop out at some point. Carolina, hopefully traffic puts more money into them and gets them going the right way. Minnesota is strong. Indy might need more ownership, but they're a strong market. Ottawa is good. But the Cosmos, I think, are a problem, but I'm not sure the Cosmos are long for the world. They might be gone in a few years by the time we're talking about promotion and relegation really kicking in. I don't think Cosmos will be around that much longer. San Antonio, they've got a chance to do some good things. So Jacksonville is going to be fantastic next year in the NASL. But those teams all have to continue to raise their standard from a business perspective. People are so often talking about the soccer perspective and saying, well, you know, this USL team or this NASL team, they went on a cup run and they beat all these MLS teams in the U.S. Open Cup. That is great. I am not saying the gap in terms of soccer is that great. Yes, there are NASL clubs that can compete. They won't compete over the course of a long season with MLS clubs, but there are NASL clubs that can, you know, be better than Chivas is this year. Yeah, for sure. But it's the business aspect of it. That's the problem. We can't have any more Chivas's in the top division. That's what we've got now. That's what you're going to have. If you have promotion and relegation, you're going to have clubs that do things on the cheap that are consistently in survival mode in the lower divisions suddenly having to compete in Major League Soccer. And it's just, we're 5 years away at a minimum.
See, and that's why I go to an expert that has worked within the lower divisions of MLS and not someone that's a blowhard because he thinks it's what he says. Or what he says he thinks, and it's going to happen. That's why I go to Carter Krishnar, because he knows he's been in the lower divisions below MLS. I guess finally, with Jurgen Klinsmann so far, this is the end, Kardec, of the Landon Donovan era. It ended on Friday night over in Hartford, in East Hartford at Rentschler Field. And now we are on the Clint Dempsey, Michael Bradley era, if you want to call it that, because I guess they're the next ones in line.
That's fair.
That's fair. See, what did you think about Friday night? Did you see all the thank you Landons? Did you see everyone, you know, chanting, saying thank you, Landon? Do you think this was the fair send-off that he deserved?
Yeah, he deserved the send-off match. I mean, I think he should have gotten 45 minutes, not – although, you know what? Actually, 30 minutes was good to bring him off and get the applause. I mean, maybe you give him 47 minutes then and you pull him off. Oh, well, then people are still at the concessions. Yeah, maybe this was good. Or maybe you gave him 40 minutes and bring him off 5 minutes before halftime. But, yeah, this is good. I like – you know, we haven't done many send-off games for players. We did one for Tom Dooley that I was at, who had been the U.S. Mm-hmm. captain during the 98.
I remember.
Yeah, we did a send-off game for him. Eddie Pope never got a send-off game. That would have been a good one. Brian McBride never got a send-off game. Yeah, Brian McBride never got a send-off game, although McBride he kind of unretired to be on the U-23 team for the Olympics that one time, but as an overage player. But, yeah, this is a good tradition. Other countries do this. This is a healthy thing. And now that the precedent has been set, I'd love to see Clint Dempsey get this kind of send-off game. If Michael Bradley continues on his career trajectory, he should get a game like this too. It was good, and it was a good sign for soccer in this country. I was really happy about it. And I can't tell you how many people I talked to who said, you know, I really want to get and this is unfortunate for us in Florida since we had a game here tonight, but I want to get up to Hartford. I want to get up for that game because it's Landon's last game. So that's a good thing. I was pleased by it.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, Kartik, I'm going to talk to you when the show is done, and I really do mean it. Everyone, thank you very much for listening to tonight's post-game show. Obviously, we talked a little bit more than just the match. The USA levels with Honduras 1-1. For Kartik Krishnar, I'm Daniel Feuerstein. Thank you very much for listening to tonight's show, and always enjoy your football. And we will talk to you next time on the 46 Fire American Soccer Show on Monday. Bye-bye for now.